Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona Kay, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And my hope is that the information shared in this podcast will help you understand the strengths, differences, and challenges in your neurodiverse relationship as you move forward in life. Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. Welcome back to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I am so excited to be having this conversation today with a dear colleague and a dear friend, Katie Fields. And Katie, welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast.
Thank you. So happy to be here with you.
Yeah, I am so happy too. We've been talking for a long time about doing this. And Katie is a counselor, therapist, and she also is very, very spiritual, as I am. And she has started a practice that I love the name of it. It's called counseling, not counseling, counseling. So Katie, I'd love if you'd tell my listeners a little bit about what made you choose that name for your practice and kind of a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, well, I don't know what made me choose that name. It actually just like popped into my head, as some things do, which I think connects to my spirituality. Like, I feel like when you're ready for something, it is introduced. So
yep.
I wasn't planning on doing this. I was actually really doing well as a therapist. I have been in practice, in private practice since 2016, and I've been a therapist since 2010. So I just thought, okay, this is my career. I got my PhD in 2017, and that was really like my last major career goal. And then I was just going to be in private practice and enjoy being my own boss. And then I started taking on students and interns and, you know, was really enjoying myself. And then I just started getting these interesting, like, words come to me, starting in like 2021. The first one was Reiki, and I never had Reiki. I didn't really know what that word meant because I haven't heard it. I'm not in that community. So I Googled it and found out, oh, wow, this is a energetic healing modality. And I'm like, do I know anybody who does that? And I happened to have gone to mental health counseling graduate school with somebody who does that in our community. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, this thing just popped into my brain. I want to learn more about it. I want to see what Reiki feels like to receive. And I would say that that's when things really started changing for me. So I feel like Reiki as an energetic and spiritual practice opened me up and just starting unlocking levels of downloads for me to receive my next task or my next thing to pursue. So the next thing was Akashic Records, and then a client introduced me to Human Design, and I was really excited about that. And then I've always been interested in tarot, as you know about me. But counseling really came last year, and I had no idea where it was going to go. It was just like, all right, let's just see what this looks like. And I feel like it's on the precipice of really launching. So I've been test driving it. I've been like doing the, what do they call it? Like beta testing with like my clients, my therapeutic clients, about like, hey, are people actually interested in receiving some sort of spiritual version of mental health and emotional health and relational health care? And it turns out that they are. So I've been having a lot of fun with it, test driving it with my existing clients. And I'm just really looking forward to launching more fully into that because I really feel like that's my big next.
I love it. I love it. And the reason I wanted to have you on the podcast is because, well, first of all, you and I have been friends for a while. But also, I think there are a lot of neurodivergent folks out there
who have not had an opportunity to really understand their authentic voice and to take kind of radical responsibility for the path they want to go on for their life and in their relationship. And I thought that it would be really, really helpful for us to talk about how all the things that you're doing now could be so impactful for neurodiverse couples and neurodivergent individuals. And everybody knows, I am late identified ADHD and I embrace it fully. And I think since I was a little kid, I was always very spiritual. My mother had me meditating when I was like 10, and I don't know if I ever told you that. And yeah, and she was, into tarot cards, and she'd take me to, I remember there was a spiritual bookstore that we went to in South Florida, and we would go and be with some of the Reiki healers and all of that stuff. And I learned so much at a young age. And I think when we're in our relationships, our love relationships, and even family, we can go off track a little bit, and sometimes a lot of bit. And I hope that this conversation that we're going to have is maybe going to help some people kind of get back on track. And I want folks to know that Katie's work is available. She's available to do consultations worldwide. And at the end of our conversation, I'll have you give your contact information. But let's start a little bit, this conversation a little bit around the two things that you have kind of connected in your work. And those two things are ego and soul. And I'd love if we could talk a little bit more about kind of how you define each of those. And I'll bring in kind of the neurodivergent piece as we talk. How do you define those, and what do they look like for the work you're doing?
Yeah, well, traditional mental health therapy, I think, focuses mostly on ego. And I think that's a taboo word to use because a lot of people perceive ego as a bad thing, or that we're, if we have ego, that means like we're self-indulgent and we think we're better than other people. And that's not in the case in what I'm talking about with ego. For me, I understand ego to be like our persona suit. We all have it. It's what our soul embraces when it incarnates in this physical material plane, which is the third dimension. So our soul uses the ego to interact with this material world. And I think that a lot of people come into therapy not really knowing what soul is or accessing their soul. And so that means that they're really just their ego's bringing their ego into therapy and saying, hey, I'd like to be more egoic. Like, help me be in control of myself. Help me make sure I get what I want, how I want it, when I want it. And I think that's also a lot of issues that couples face and parents face. Like, it can be a power dynamic with them and their children. So I didn't know any of this language as a traditional mental health or couples family therapist. Nobody even talks about ego except for a brief snapshot when they might talk about Freud or even Carl Jung. It's like
Right.
that, it's a brief moment in my therapeutic training that that's even like named. And then there's really no thorough definition of it. And then we don't talk about it anymore. But it's a really important component in the work that I do with counseling. So counseling is actually bringing in the element of soul, which I think is essential to any human's wellness. And we're doing a disservice as traditional mental health therapists if we don't acknowledge that humans have souls. And we don't have to be a religious therapist to be able to do that. One of the types of therapy that I'm trained in is called internal family systems therapy. And it's an evidence-based approach that talks about our, we all are multidimensional personalities. And that means that we have protective parts, we have parts of us that manage ourselves, and then we have parts that take on our burdens and vulnerabilities. And then we have the self. And I think that that is a term that is more accepted in the therapeutic community, the clinical community, but it was still a hard road for Dick Schwartz to get that integrated. into the clinical psychotherapy. So I really respect him for all of his efforts towards that.
Me too.
So
Yeah.
I think that was a great bridge for what I want to bring into the scene is counseling, like literally calling it what it is. It's our soul. And what I consider the soul is our essence that comes from our higher self, which then comes from our divine spark from the creator. And you can have your own language for your own spirituality under spiritual understanding with that. But that's what I think of as like ego and soul. So we have our spiritual self, which is the soul, and then our physical self, which is our ego, and they're intended to work together in our lifetime. And I do think that when we're born, they probably are like best friends. I like to think of them as like best
Yeah.
friends. They're like, oh
Yeah.
yay, Katie was born. Oh yay, Mona was born. And we're gonna take her through life and we're gonna guide her. And then what I think happens is that our parents and our caregivers are there's a term called like over-identified with their personality. That comes from some of the Enneagram studies that I've done, which we can get into, or not Enneagram studies that I've read. And it's like we can become over-identified with our ego self. And again, like separated from soul, and ego draws out ego. So if I'm coming to my child from my place of ego, I'm gonna draw out their ego. But if I'm coming to my child from a place of self, soul, I'm gonna draw out their soul. And that's what one of the another contribution I hope to make through counseling is helping parents be more soul-centered so that they can keep their child more soul-centered and that their child doesn't have to go through what a lot of us as adults have had to go through, which like kind of get hijacked by our egos. And then we just go through life and relationships from a place of ego, which is really not very fulfilling
No.
and perpetuates mental illness. You know, emotional imbalances and relational dysfunction.
Amen. And I think, for those folks that are listening, I'm going to share a little bit about how this applies to neurodiverse relationships and to neurodivergent folks, because I would almost say, Katie, that for a lot of folks, being ego focused is masking or camouflaging. And I think, yeah, you agree? I think we all wear masks, and I'm not talking about, masks to protect ourselves against COVID. I'm talking about those masks that we wear to be a certain persona in certain situations. But people who are neurodivergent, we often have to wear masks to keep us safe, to keep us protected from people that might bully us or might treat us poorly because we have a different way of thinking or a different way of talking or a different way of functioning, or they feel we're too much or what have you. And so I think when we understand, as in IFS, our self, our true self, and we have some comfort, some level of comfort with our authentic self and our authentic voice, then we can be more in touch with our soul or spirit or whatever word folks want to use that feels most comfortable. But I agree with you. I think when we come into this world, we're just perfect little human beings, and then we get conditioned. And I think neurodivergent folks really get conditioned to be very neurotypical and to take like their essence away. And then when they find out they're neurodivergent, it's literally a grieving and a mourning process. And I would imagine that's for some of your clients too, understanding that you lost your essence as you tried to be this persona that people wanted you to be. Does that resonate at all or
Oh
make
yeah,
sense?
so much, so much. I feel that personally, and we've talked about like the potential that I could be neurodiverse. I've just never really looked into that. But I certainly understand that the ego is incredibly adaptive and very protective of us. And so it makes so much sense how it could create these masking behaviors to protect the person, the self, the soul. So that it doesn't keep getting hurt by this feedback that it receives from its loved ones, from people that it really wants to be accepted and embraced by. And if it gets that feedback that, oh, you just made an adaptation or a change that helps you be received and the way you want to be received, it's going to get reinforced over time. And I totally feel that, like, once you become aware of what you've been doing, this makes me think of my Enneagram type 3. And you realize how hard you've been working and you didn't even realize it just to survive your day-to-day interactions with other humans. It's exhausting. And it is kind of like a grieving process of losing like this version of you when you're changing into a more authentic version of you.
Yeah, and a lot of people who have been in your life, including your parents and your family members, as you become your authentic self, and you find out that, you know, you've been wearing this mask or camouflaging your entire life. And not only is it exhausting, but there are so many folks that end up with serious mental health issues and serious physical health issues and don't understand why. And then when they find out, you know, who they really are and how their brain is wired, and they begin to understand their neurology and what they have had to suppress their entire life, or been ridiculed or put down for their entire life, and then they start to become more of their authentic selves, it really can, in some ways, I was going to say destroy, you know, so many things that you have had in your life. I'm going to use that word. It can destroy them, but it also can rebuild a wonderful life that is based on authenticity.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That makes me think of the Tower tarot card, right? Like I think about how the tower is like something we build to protect ourselves and we just try to get higher and higher. And I see that that's like the masking that we can do to survive. And then eventually we're like, we just can't do this anymore. And we have to come down and we have to face our fears and reconcile who we really are to move forward. So I could totally see how that would be like a tower moment. But then how much of a relief it can be if you can find safe spaces and safe people to be authentic with, and how that would alleviate many, many, many health issues. Just complete total wellness is possible then.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know that you also are an EMDR practitioner, and I know you've dealt with a lot of people who have had trauma. And I always recommend on the podcast that folks who want to heal their trauma, that they find a somatic therapist. And I've also talked about EMDR. But if we don't know and we aren't familiar with our neurology, or we deny, you know, how our brain is wired, I think it perpetuates this continuous anxiety and angst inside of us. And it's going to affect every single relationship we have, starting with ourselves. And so for those neurodiverse couples out there that are wondering why they're in a constant state of emotional dysregulation, or they are having the same arguments and fights over and over again, chances are it's because one or both of them are not comfortable being their authentic self. And that's really tough. Because if you become your authentic self and you really get in touch with your soul and your spirit, you may not want to be in the relationships that you're in anymore. And I know for me, you know, I've had to, and I've had to, for my own mental health, let go of some friendships and some family members. And it is very, very difficult. But when you do it, and you're able to move beyond it and heal and grow and forgive, because there's hurt on both sides, then you can become, you know, a better version of yourself. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You have to shed what was connected to the old you, the you that wasn't serving you, and in alignment with your true self, I do think you'll actually attract the people who are suited for that. So it's hard to say goodbye. It's hard to leave relationships, and it kind of feels like being on a flying trapeze. Like here you are in this rung, and it's holding you up, but you can't stay there forever, and you have to be in the in-between in order to get to the next rung. And that in-between can be very scary because, my experience is humans are social beings, and we want to be connected, and we want to be in community, and we will settle for less than connected and less than authentic community, but it's really not how we're designed to be.
Yeah. And it's at the expense of our authentic self. And again, that's why so many people are dealing with mental health issues and physical ailments that they may not know the root cause of. And so I know that, you talked about Reiki and you talked about energetic healing. And I just want to touch on that a little bit before we go on to talk about, we're also going to talk about numerology and the Enneagram. But I know that as I've gone through my healing journey and I've changed my energy, and believe me, it was not easy because, and I've talked about this on the podcast, I got emotionally dysregulated in my 30-year marriage every time I was triggered, didn't understand those childhood wounds, didn't understand why I was getting repeatedly triggered, hadn't healed that father wound, all that good stuff, right? But my energy started to change. And there were people in my life who just didn't understand that energy. And the energy was, I'm going to set boundaries. I'm going to be very respectful, but vocal about what my needs are. I am going to share with you what I am able to do and what I'm not able to do. And if that's not okay, I understand and we can part ways. And I think the boundary setting and the being comfortable in the energy that you are kind of emanating as you start becoming more authentically yourself can be scary for some people and healing for you, but scary for some other people who may be afraid of their own healing process and their own trauma and going deep. Yeah, thoughts?
Well, I think that that's kind of how we're designed, that once we start healing, it's an invitation for others. And hopefully they're ready for it, and hopefully they take the invitation and do their work. But if they're not ready, or they don't want to, or they don't understand enough, they're going to be put off by it, and you're probably going to get more of their protectors from their egoic place. And it can just be so unsettling. But I do have a lot of hope that just doing your work will allow somebody else to do their work. And I think that that's a really lovely bonus of the work we're doing for ourselves. And
Yeah.
I tell my clients that you're the only person that's going to be with you no matter what, every single second of every single day for the entirety of your lifetime. It makes sense that you befriend you and that you are your priority. Whereas so many of us were taught to like do for others, like we have to do this for our family, or we have to do this for our partner, or we have to do this for our children. If we're not okay, we can't help anybody else be okay. We have to put our mask on first, a different kind of mask, like on the airplane, before
Right.
we are really available and sustainable to help others. So I really do think it's so worth doing this work for yourself, even though in some religious traditions and in some cultures it can seem really selfish, like that's a bad thing to want to make sure you're taking care of you, and that you're doing what's in alignment with who you really are.
Yeah.
It's so helpful.
Yeah. And there are people that you may lose in your life. And it may be forever, it may just be for a short time, and that's okay. Because as Katie said, you're the only person that you're going to be with for the rest of your life. So if you're not working on healing yourself and growing and becoming the best version of yourself, not at the expense of other people, because I think we can still have kindness and respect and compassion for the people in our lives, but not also at the expense of ourselves, do we stop the work And there will be people that will want you, that will push back and will want you to become who you've always been, whether it's a people pleaser or somebody who just kind of went along and avoided conflict. But if that hasn't been healthy for you and you're becoming, more comfortable without your mask or without camouflaging and being your authentic self, it will be scary, I guarantee you, and it will sometimes hurt emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, but believe me, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about numerology. If you don't mind sharing a little bit about what you do in that realm, I'm sure some of the listeners are interested in that area and haven't really delved into it. And maybe we have some folks who are listening who very much practice in this field and are knowledgeable and would love to hear more about what you do.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like we should talk about the Enneagram first.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, so if you haven't heard of the Enneagram, it's a nine type personality tool that helps you really like kind of see yourself. It's a mirror. And I think a lot of people, if they haven't taken the Enneagram or haven't done a lot of work with themselves, it at first reflection, it's going to reflect your ego. And it's going to just show you like all these tendencies that your personality has, and also what's driving them, where they're coming from. So I'll just give you an example. I'm an Enneagram 3, and that means that I'm an achiever performer. And at first sight, I really liked, oh, achiever. Yes, I am an achiever. I like to get all the degrees and all the certificates and all the awards. I like to be seen and have my name on something. But then I see, oh, the performer. What does that mean? Because I'm not a performer. I'm not an actress or anything like that, a musician. The performer of the achiever performer is that kind of like what we were talking about earlier, the masking, like my ego has been really strong in anticipating what other people want from me. So I joke, I'm in Gainesville, Florida, and we have a really popular football team. And I joke that my performer ego is so good that I could convince people that I belong on the football team. And I'm not athletically inclined at all. If I really needed to, I could put on a helmet and shoulder pads and everything, get on that field and do whatever it takes if my life depended on it. And that's the thing about an Enneagram 3. We can be very deceptive, and it's not usually to hurt other people, it's to protect ourselves. We hide behind masks all the time. We want people to like us, and we want to feel safe and accepted. And that's what I was re referencing earlier about like thinking I could really. Yeah, hear what you were saying about what it's like to have to adapt to what other people want and need from us to feel safe and accepted, included. And when I first took the Enneagram, that's where I was. And then I kind of put it down because I was like, okay, this is too much. I'm overwhelmed. I can't. And this was before I really identified as spiritual at all. And then several years later, it came back around to me. And then I could start seeing how it was a spiritual tool, actually. And that was its original intention. It wasn't supposed to be like this fun personality quiz that you just get to see. Oh, yeah, these are the ways I show up in relationships. That way I can introduce myself to other people as an Enneagram 3, and they know something about me, and I could have an excuse for the why I do the things that I do. So it's as a spiritual tool. It actually helps us get back to our true selves. There's a soul child theory of the Enneagram that we're actually our growth point. And so the Enneagram has arrows to the other types of personality. So for an Enneagram 3, the growth point is to the 6, which means when I was little, I probably was more of a 6. And the 3 is the stress point of the 6. So because I was little and vulnerable and highly influenced by caregivers and just authority people around me, I adapted into a 3 to feel safe. And I think that really speaks to what we were talking about earlier about the how our ego is very adaptive and it wants to protect us. So it's been a lovely model for me to really understand this dynamic between ego and soul and who we really are, and help people get back to their authentic selves. And this
That's
is,
so wonderful. Yeah, that's so wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
yeah, and then I was just going to bridge it into numerology because I feel like numerology takes it a whole step further. But if you want to talk about the Enneagram, is there
Yeah.
anything you wanted to say about that?
Yeah, just for a little bit, because I think if we think back to our childhood when we were really young, we were probably naturally who we came to this earth to be, right?
Yeah.
And then we're told not to do certain things. I remember my mother telling me, I don't know why I have this memory, when I was like 3 or 4. She told me not to be so generous with my things. So I guess I would give things to my friends if they asked, whether it was candy or food or toys or whatever. And she told me that I shouldn't be so generous. And that was something that, she kind of kept telling me. But it was just naturally who I was because I've never been a material person. I don't need a lot of things. And if somebody does need something, I mean, this definitely, kind of goes with me being a social worker. If somebody needs something and I have it and I can give it and it's not usually at the expense of myself, I'm happy to give and I'm happy to do. Now, I didn't necessarily turn that off throughout my entire adult life because I think I was a social worker in my personal life, not just my professional life. So I do think that it affected my mental health and what have you. But naturally, I think I was a giver, and I got told not to give so much. So I think for the listeners, think about when you were little. What you really enjoyed doing, what you loved doing, what just brought a smile to your face. In the autistic world, they talk about autistic joy. And I think a lot of folks, when they start unmasking and understand how their brain works and what they need, they can be in states of autistic joy, which is just beautiful. It's like pure bliss. And it may be, around fashion, or it may be around makeup for women, or it may be around animals, or it may be around working on a car, or working in the garden, or, reading about your, love of history, whatever it is. And you literally can stay in that bliss and that state of joy for hours and sometimes days on end. And, people may not understand that, but I think in a way that's how we were born, to find those points of joy and to be able to have more of that in our lives. And I've done the Enneagram, but I'm not, deeply immersed in it and as knowledgeable as you are. So, how we're born changes because of the ego and all the people that are kind of wanting us to be part of the tribe and fit in. And by understanding our Enneagram, we can also get more in touch with our authentic self and who maybe we came here onto this earth to be, if I understand correctly.
Yes. And I love what
Okay.
you said about the joy, because that's what I think it is when we're actually in flow with our true selves, our true nature, our soul connected to our higher self. Like that is divinity flowing through us. And it, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have that more often and know how to get it by being our authentic selves?
Yeah. And I think that's what our children teach us. I mean, I have one daughter. She's, going to be 28 this year. And I loved being a mother because I literally sometimes would just watch her be in her essence and just flow. And, I'm sure you do that with your kids too. And it's like, gosh, you don't even remember when you were like that, but I think we all have the opportunity to find that flow, to find that joy. And so
Yes.
this is one tool that can help you understand a little bit more. Is there anything else you want to share about the Enneagram?
Yeah, I just wanted to give another example. So you may not remember what it was like when you were little, but you may remember what people said about you. So I remember my mother saying I was slow as molasses. And I also remember her calling me a hemorrhoid, which I didn't know what that was when
Oh
I was
my gosh.
little. And neither of those things are a three personality. Threes are fast. They care so much about efficiency and productivity because that's the achiever for them. So I knew that when I was little, I couldn't have been a three. And then I remembered the reason why she called me a hemorrhoid was because I'd hide behind her and I'd peek out and I would look and I wouldn't want to leave her side and I wanted to be like wrapped around her leg. And that's definitely not a three either. A three is like very courageous. Like we're go-getters. We're going to be like the trailblazer. We tend to be really self-contained. We don't feel like we need other people to do anything. We are able to accomplish everything on our own, mostly because we don't allow ourselves to have feelings or needs. But I think when I was little, I was really needy. I think I was really like cautious. And that's very much a six personality where the six is the loyal skeptic. They are really good at deep relationships. They want to be connected to people. They're really good at knowing how to really let other people be seen and understood, and they want to be seen and understood. They're detail oriented, which is something where I find joy. Like, I have absolutely loved researching Enneagram, numerology, all these spiritual practices I've been learning. Like, that has brought me joy. And I really feel like that's because that's much more in alignment with who I really am. Whereas when I was in school, I feel like I've studied more on these practices than I did in school. I would like read like the first and last lines of paragraphs and like just barely do enough to pass my classes. I was doing my three stuff where I was cutting corners just to be productive and get the grade. I would do what I needed to do. And luckily that got me through, but I'd much rather be more detail oriented and thorough, which is more of the six personality.
Wow. I think this is, for those folks that aren't familiar with the Enneagram, I think that they're going to want to run out and find out what they are on the Enneagram. And I know this is something that you help folks with, right? You
Yes, and
help
I
them.
actually have a link to a free quiz on my website. So if they're curious, they can just go to my website and take that free quiz from Truity.
Okay. And why don't you give folks your website address and we'll repeat it again at the end. What is your website address?
It's fearlesscounseling.com. So the word
Okay.
fearless, FEARLESS, counseling, CounSouling.com.
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes for sure. And
Thank you.
we'll mention it again, yeah, at the end. So, the Enneagram I know has been helpful to a lot of folks. And I think in the last few years, I've heard a lot of podcasts where they've had guests talking about it. And I think it helps a lot of folks become more in touch with their true self. How do you use numerology in combination with the Enneagram?
Yeah, well, I am currently looking into, is there a parallel between the 1 through 9 Enneagram types and the 1 through 9 main numbers of numerology? And it just has brought a lot of curiosity for me, and again, joy doing this research. Right now, I'm still in the midst of seeing what's going on because they don't quite align, but there are some similarities. I'm curious about, like, in numerology, there are, like certain tendencies for each number that may more align, you know, if you're in that higher vibration or lower vibration of the number. So, more to come on that. Stay tuned. But I do think it's really interesting that they both use the numbers 1 through 9, and they're both kind of ancient ways to guide people through this human experience. And that's what really intrigues me about these practices is clearly, I don't know, some being, some place in the divine world saw that we were struggling down here as a human race. And I really think they did. They like put these ideas in the fourth dimension, which is our thought space, just for whoever was the right person. And there could have been several right people to arrive at these thoughts, to develop these so that we kind of have like a guide. You know, I've worked with parents for several years when I worked in child welfare and helping families. They always said, you know, I wish my kid came with a manual, a user manual, or some way to really understand who they are. And I think that these practices are that. So now that I'm a parent, my daughters are 2 and 6 right now, I've used these practices. The Enneagram isn't quite a practice I can use with them yet because they'd have to take their own questions, quiz with their own questions, but I can watch their behaviors and see what I think they might be. And I'm doing my best to preserve them. But I feel like numerology has been much more crystal clear about that. So numerology is an understanding that our soul chose our date of birth and the name on our birth certificate as a way to program its experience during this lifetime. So I don't think you have to believe in reincarnation to enjoy numerology, but I think it's much more fun if you do. So the idea is like, this is a place for the soul to learn and develop and evolve. So this is an earth school where the soul can experience really tangible things in this material world, this three-dimensional world where we have an ego suit that can help us interact with this physical world of people and things and manifestations of objects. The creative possibilities here are just wonderful, but also very challenging because it's so dense. So the numbers, I like to think about them as kind of like notes in music. It's like the soul and the higher self agreed on, okay, let's play these notes while you're in this lifetime so that you can hear this particular melody or you can have this particular set of experiences so that you can gain the skills that you came here to learn. And if, you know, you think about, if you do entertain reincarnation, there's also these ideas of karma, which can be revealed in numerology, where you could see, oh, in a former lifetime, I had this incomplete cycle. Or I spent a lot of time in this one extreme and now I want to spend a lot of time in this other extreme. So it's not the idea that karma is like you're damned or there's something really awful about you. It's like, no, like these are karmic patterns. These are energetic patterns that are just looking to be reconciled or balanced in this next lifetime. So
yeah, and there are opportunities for you to learn, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's all about. Is lessons and opportunities to learn, become, evolve. Yep. So that's the way I use numerology. And one of the ways I like thinking about numerology that came from a book I really like called The Heart of Numerology by Lynn Bwess. It's thinking about okay, so you translate the letters of your name into what's called the Pythagorean alphabet. So it's just 1 through 9. You distribute each of the letters back and forth until each letter has a number 1 through 9. And then you add up those numbers for all the letters, just the consonants, and then just the vowels. So you'll get 3 numbers from this addition, in addition to the numbers you get out of your date of birth. So those are the 4 main core numbers of your numerology chart. The birth date number is your life path. So that's like the main theme, the main like type of lesson that you're going to learn in this lifetime. So I'm a life path 6. My lesson, my theme in this lifetime is all about love, which I think is really interesting having been in a 3 space Enneagram wise for so long. Like Enneagram 3s don't care much about love, like real true love. They're all about accomplishing the goal. They want to be seen, but they don't want to connect. They don't want to really have deep relationships, because that's when you get vulnerable. That's when you feel emotions and have needs. And that's not what a three does, because that threes fear that that will bog them down. And it does, because they're trying to be really efficient in life and accomplish as much as they can. But a six, isn't that interesting that my life path six in my growth point, my truest self, maybe a Enneagram six? I think that's interesting. I
It
do,
is.
and I was telling you earlier about how sixes really do like deep, meaningful relationships. They like to feel secure in the people that they have in their lives, that they can feel authentically seen and held, and that they're safe to be just the way that they are, fearful and all.
I love
So,
it.
yeah, so that's the theme of my life, which again reinforces that I was probably a six before. And then your integrated self is all of the numbers of your, like in my case, I have a first, middle, and last name. So the integrated self is what happens when our ego and soul are besties. And that's what we're trying to get back to. And the personality number, which is just your consonants, is your ego's number. Basically, that's how you're going to show up outwardly, your persona. And so your Enneagram initially will probably be more like your personality number in numerology. And your soul number is just the vowels, just the numbers of the vowels in your name. So then your ego plus soul should equal your integrated self, which is also sometimes called the destiny number.
I love it. I love it. And I've known my life path for ever, because my mother was very much into numerology. And I actually shared with Katie, I have a few of my mother's old books. And one is a numerology book. I can't remember if it was from the late 60s or the early 70s. And she had, completed my numerology with my maiden name and with my married name. And she also did it for my ex-husband, and it's in the book. And she did it for my daughter.
That's
You
so
know, I
cool.
think it was, before my daughter was born or at the hospital. It was so interesting. And what's so interesting, and I've shared this with you, Katie, is my life path, my daughter's life path, and my ex-husband's life path, they're all 11s. And for those folks that don't know anything about numerology, an 11 life path is a very spiritual path, right?
Yep.
And I've known since my daughter was born, and I've known this since, I married my ex-husband, because he was also very spiritual. He read tarot cards and was into astrology and numerology, that, we were connected to each other for reasons. I'm not sure that I know all of the reasons, but I know that part of my life path is to educate, to share, to be vulnerable. And that's exactly what I'm doing, with the podcast and all the work that I think I've done throughout my career as a social worker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if you want to add anything else to the 11 life path.
Yeah. Well, I think the 11 life path is such a responsibility, and it's a double one, and the double one, but it's also a two, right? One plus one is two. So I just feel like the 11, there's such a complexity there that I find fascinating. So it's also it feels like a doorway, right? If you see like the ones next to each other, that you're like you can really help people do tremendous things if you can really embrace that life path. And again, that's why I want people to know their life path. I want people to like really understand, wow, your soul had a real important purpose for you here. Like you matter. Like that's really honestly what it's all about for me, is I want people to know that they matter. Sure, there may be like 7, 8 billion of us here, but we matter. Like every single person has a really significant place in this existence right here, right now. And if we could all embrace that and live that and walk that, our world could really change. And it's really exciting, because I think that now more than ever, people are open to that, more than ever in my lifetime, at least.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And I'm older than you, and I, remember how my mother was so into this at a young age, and she found her tribe, she found her people, but I think there were a lot of people who just didn't know what to do with some of the information she shared. So she, was hesitant to share with everybody, but when she found her tribe, it was so wonderful, and it brought her and them tremendous joy and understanding. And I think for my listeners, for those of you that are interested in maybe understanding more about your life path through numerology and the things that maybe you were put on this earth to learn, and maybe some of the karma that you have, and ways in which you can get more in touch with your soul and your spirit and your authentic self and go deeper than maybe you've gone before. This isn't therapy, although, Katie is a licensed therapist in the state of Florida, but this is really about delving deeply into your essence. And I think it can be scary, right, Katie? It can be scary, but I think with a coach, a mentor, somebody who is there to support you and understands all the different nuances or paths that are possible, and uses a very strength-based approach, can really help you, I think, find the path forward to be the best version of who you came to this earth to be. What do you think?
And I do think it's so important to have support along that journey, as you were that support person for me last week, and I am so grateful for you. Because it is jarring to be shifting and being more authentic and seeing what has to change in order for that to occur around you. But I do believe that the universe won't just let us, fall into oblivion where we can't recover. The idea is to be able to do our true work here, be our authentic self, learn our lessons, contribute our uniqueness. So I on my website, I offer a free sample reading to just, you could try it on. I'll give you a little bit to see if this is even something you're interested in. If you are, then I offer, go ahead and get a full reading. I really have a great package that allows people to get multiple readings and then coaching so that they can see where these things interconnect. Because if you just do one, that's like looking through one angle. And if you do another and another, you can have a more complete picture. And then the shift from being a therapist, like clinical work, to being a coach and a consultant is that I like to be much more like guided and directive. We have these tools to really see, okay, this is what you're going for, this is where you're going, and then how to be a little more direct and succinct. This is the threeness coming out of me, but thorough, right? Of being in full alignment and having that support so that you don't feel like you're out there on your own trying to figure it out, especially if you were like me, where you didn't have very many people in your circle that knew about these things and you were kind of a trailblazer in your community.
Absolutely. And for those folks that are currently in a neurodiverse relationship, and you're open to this, but your partner is not open to this, you don't need to go through this as a couple. I think as we become more aware of ourself and what our needs are and what our preferences are and what we came here to this earth to do, I think we can discern whether the relationship we're in currently is the right relationship for us. Or for those of you that have left your relationship, and it doesn't matter what your neurotype is, if you've left your relationship or chosen to stay in your relationship and you want to go deeper in life and you want to understand yourself better, these are phenomenal tools and they've been around for a long time. And I think it's wonderful, Katie, that you have the experience and the knowledge of the therapeutic part, and then you've added the spiritual part. And that's why I love the ego and soul, the connection between the ego and soul, and how you're able to help people on their journey, whatever direction they want to go in. Because, like I said, it can be a little scary, can be a little daunting in the beginning to have to look in the mirror and have to face some of your fears or challenges or things that kind of were buried. But I think as we grow again, we can have more joy and peace and nervous system regulation and things that we came here to do and be. And who wouldn't want more of that? I know I do every day. I mean, I love it. Yeah.
Oh, it makes me think of your guidebook and what we talked about, the GPS system, and about how, like, really I feel like we are, our soul in our persona suit, which is our ego, is driving a body, which is a very highly sensitive and intelligent vehicle through life. And as a therapist, I would tell clients that, you know, you're feeling anxious and then you feel depressed, like it's like your body's trying to like move you towards comfort, move you towards alignment, and when it's exhausted from trying to do that, it's going to shut down because it's depleted and it has to take a break from that. So once you know more about your true self, then it's so much easier to be in alignment, to drive your highly sensitive vehicle, and to be able to listen to the sensitivities of your vehicle so that you can get what you need, and you know which relationships to be in, and you know how to take care of yourself so that your nervous system is regulated and well cared for, and then it doesn't lead to other health issues.
Absolutely. And I always say on the podcast that we need to understand our sensory sensitivities and we need to understand what brings us into sensory or emotional overload. And when we understand that and we understand more about, our Enneagram, we understand more about our life path and other things related to numerology. And Katie also does tarot cards. I'll just add that in there. The more we can understand and the more guidance we can get from our soul, I think the more we can live the life we were meant to live. So, Katie, again, your website is fearlesscounsoul, SOULING.com. Is there anything else that you want to share before we end this episode?
I think we've talked about everything that I was hoping we'd get through. That was a lot.
I know. I know. I love it. I love it. And I thank you so much for joining me on the podcast and for sharing your passion for this work. And if folks are interested in working with you, the information about your website will be in the show notes. And I hope that many of you will reach out to Katie for her free kind of discovery call and that you'll want to work with her moving forward because I think there are many people that have come through my support groups, Katie, whether it's the couple support groups, and Katie was talking about the Neurodiverse Love GPS, which I created for the couple support groups. It's not for sale, but those that have come through that support group have had a chance to get a copy of that. And all the other tools that I've used and the support groups, what is so wonderful is people are finding others who have experienced similar things and they're getting support to move on in life. And this work is just about you finding out more about you so that you can be better in all your relationships, but it starts with you.